This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It's time to be sworn in, the swearing in of the next president of the United States. And today on Viewpoint, we're going to talk about not only the swearing in of the president, but what it means to put your hand on the Bible.
This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
I was saved by God to make America great again, he said. The journey to reclaim our republic has not been an easy one, said Donald Trump in his inaugural speech. Those who wish to stop our cause have tried to take my freedom, and indeed, to take my life. Well, America was born in bravery, and it will continue to exist in bravery, bravery to speak the truth, bravery to stand against the evil tide, bravery to stand when all other forces seem to want to give up. Sometimes it takes one who is willing to take a stand, doesn't it? So I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's Conversation Today, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. Today will be no exception as we focus on bravery and courage for such a time as this. Question. If Donald Trump could say, I believe I was saved by God to make America great again, what have you been saved by God to do? Interesting question, isn't it? What have you been saved by God to do? Because you see, Donald Trump is just one person. He happens to be a very brave and courageous leader. But how about you? You see, God has called every one of us to be brave and courageous. Be strong and courageous, Moses said to Joshua. Be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Don't be dismayed, neither discouraged, but be filled with courage, for God is with you wherever you go. It seems to me that that ultimately is the message that we need to understand from the inaugural speech and the change of an administration. It's not just a change of administration, friends. It's a change of direction. It's a change of hope, and a change of purpose. In fact, as I think about the word purpose, I think about a situation in which it seems that almost everything is lost. The famous philosopher Gaty once said, courage lost, all lost. Courage lost, all lost. Indeed, this is a time when we need courage. We need courage like never before. But courage has to be related and rooted in truth. It has to be rooted in righteousness. It has to be rooted in holiness. And that's where real boldness comes from. Sometimes we call it holy boldness. Holy boldness. Well, we don't want to make too much of everyone who bears some sort of leadership, whether or not they claim that God saved me to make America great again. Because holiness is holiness. Yes, we might have a holy boldness, but we also have the need to have the holiness that goes behind the boldness. And that's true for a president. It's true for us. It's true for any leadership. It's true for pastors. Why would you think that new reports are coming out concerning the matter of pastors? For instance, here's one. Christians, Americans crave honesty the most from pastors in the pulpit. Why? Because it takes some courage to speak the truth in America's pulpits today. It's not just to the bully pulpit. It's not just to the presidential pulpit. It's actually in America's pulpits. Another says public trust in pastors continues to decline. Why? because there's a lack of holy boldness. We need a touch of boldness in America today, don't we? And we need it not only from the presidency, we need it from the people, we need it from the pastors, we need it from the prophets, we need it everywhere. A new touch of boldness. So again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. It's conversation as always with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And you may be aware, I'm sure you are aware, of something called our national anthem. Our national anthem. And we're going to take a little bit of focus on that here as we move into the program today. But before we do, I would like to share with you the words of another song. It's a song that we don't hear very often. It's called This Is My Country. I learned this when I was a kid. In fact, I learned all of our patriotic songs when I was a kid and still love them to this day. Here's how the first stanza of this song goes. This is my country, land of my birth. This is my country, grandest on earth. I pledge you my allegiance, America the bold, for this is my country to have and to hold. There's only one way to hold on to a country, and that's through boldness, a kind of holy boldness, and that is what's required today. It's also going to require a spiritual renewal and revival in America. We'll talk more about that in the second half of the program as Kirk Cameron joins us here concerning his new book. That's right, concerning America the Brave, America the Bold, America the Brave, America the Bold, Courage Lost, All Lost. There was a fellow by the name of Francis Scott Key. He was a godly lawyer. And on September 14th, 1814, he penned on a little napkin or piece of paper a little poem. The poem was after he witnessed the bombardment of Fort McHenry at the British Royal Navy during the Battle of Baltimore in the War of 1812. And Key was inspired by the large U.S. flag, known as the Star, later known as the Star-Spangled Banner, flying triumphantly over the fort after the battle. During the bombardment, Key witnessed something very dramatic. Francis Scott Key had been called to go to and board a ship for the U.S. to gain dominion over a hostage. A hostage, yes. A doctor, Dr. Bean. And so Key, in holy boldness, secured the release of Bean after conversing with Major General Robert Ross and Vice Admiral Alexander Cochrane. Ross initially refused to release Bean's, but relented after reading letters brought by Francis Scott Key, written by wounded British soldiers of war that were praising American doctors for their kind treatment. And because Key and Skinner had overheard details of the plans for the attack on Baltimore, they were prevented from going ashore until after the battle several days later. So, this godly lawyer had to endure this massive British attack on Fort McHenry. What happened? Well, we're about to hear what happened, and then we're going to hear one of the most dramatic, I think perhaps the most wonderful rendition of that Star-Spangled Banner ever sung. I hope you'll be ready. This is Viewpoint. America's coming back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
It was a terrifying event. Francis Scott Key, a godly lawyer, was out there in Baltimore, the Baltimore Harbor, as the British were bombarding Fort McHenry as never before. During the bombardment, HMS Erebus provided the rocket's red glare, while the heavy mortar bomb ships HMS Terror, Volcano, Devastation, Meteor, and Etna provided the bombs bursting in air. Around 1,500 to 1,800 bombshells and over 700 rockets were fired at the fort, but with minimal casualties and damage being done. Francis Scott Key was inspired by the U.S. victory and the sight of the large U.S. flag flying triumphantly over the fort after the victory. The flag later came to be known as the Star-Spangled Banner, and today is on display in the National Museum of American History. Aboard the ship that morning, Key began writing his lyrics on the back of a letter he had kept in his pocket. Late afternoon on September 16th, Key, Skinner, and Beans, that had been retrieved, were released from the fleet, and they arrived in Baltimore that evening. And he finished his manuscript untitled and unsigned. The Star-Spangled Banner. Very difficult to sing, but when it's sung, it's sung with great gusto. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? That's what we focus on here today. If America is to come back, it will be through holy boldness. And so we listen to a rendition of our national anthem, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best, greatest ever sung. I hope you'll agree. Listen carefully. my home, the home of the free, the home of the brave, the land of the free and the home of the brave. You see, freedom isn't free. You got to pay the price for your liberty. And the price of liberty is courage and holy boldness. When nobody else is willing to stand, somebody must stand. Fortunately, we have one who did stand and gave an inaugural address that anyone who listened could well understand. The passion and the purpose for which that address took place. It was said in times past, he who has a why to live can withstand almost any how. He who has a why to live can withstand almost any how. No leader in American history, even going back to the times of the American Revolution, has had to withstand more than Donald J. Trump. Yes, George Washington, no question about it, leading the army in bloody feet in Valley Forge and so on. Years ago, I was given an award, the Valley Forge Freedom Award, for my address then to the country. That was back in 1993 or 94. But today we have another person standing. And the question is whether you and I will stand. And having done all to stand, stand. Having our loins girt about with truth, having on the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the shield of faith, the sword of the Spirit, our feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and having the boldness to stand. The final stanza of our national anthem is very seldom sung. Oh, thus be it e'er when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave then over the land of the free and the home of the brave. A heaven-rescued land? Is it the power of God that has made and preserved us a nation through thick and thin? Have we been facing the bombs? And are we to see God's glory through it all? Through the dawn's early light? Are we going to see that happen? It will only happen again, friends, as we step forward, every single one of us, in holy boldness. Courage lost? All lost. I give thanks to Sandy Patty for that amazing rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner, our national anthem. This is my country, land of my birth. This is my country, grandest on earth. I pledge you my allegiance, not over God, but my allegiance under God, to have and to hold, for this is my country, to have and to hold, America the bold. So, I am so grateful for where we stand today. I am so grateful for the renaming of landmarks such as Mount McKinley, there in Alaska, the highest mountain in the continental United States. It had been changed by Barack Obama to Denali, and now it has been changed back to Mount McKinley. It takes a little boldness to do things like that. It takes a little boldness to declare that there are only two genders. From this time forth, the United States government will recognize only two genders. In other words, to recognize that what God has spoken, we should agree. And if we don't agree, there might be hell to pay. So if we're to gain ground before God and see his glory once again in our land, we're going to have to agree with his purposes. It was said that Donald Trump did not give his pledge, his oath of office, with his hand on the Bible. On the other hand, I saw his wife, Melania, presenting two Bibles. And it is said that one Bible was Abraham Lincoln's Bible, and the other was the Bible that had been received by Donald Trump's mother when he was 9 years old. In all of the pushing and the shoving and the inability to move with the last-minute efforts to try to choreograph an inauguration amidst the bitter cold, it appears that somehow that failed to happen. On the other hand, when he declared that from this time forth, it will be the official status of the United States government, the official policy of the United States government, that there are only two genders, what he was actually stating was, I pledge my allegiance to God's word. So he said, I was saved by God to make America great again. Some people would say America has never been great, because you see the problems, the things that should never have been. On the other hand, just like your life and mine, I guess we're a work in progress, aren't we? Where do we go from here? It's going to take holy boldness, my friends. It's going to take courage. Courage lost, all lost. Somebody has to take a stand. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
My very first book was based, its title was based on our national anthem. You see, when our national anthem told us that it was only through God, it was only through our trust in God that we would have hope as a nation. It was only through that commitment, that blessing, that reliance that we would have hope for our country. And so indeed, my first book was named after that commitment. Today, we're supposed to be receiving a connection with Kirk Cameron. Kirk Cameron has written a book called Born to be Brave, and he was supposed to be calling us and joining us here in the second half of the hour today. But the title of that book, my first book, was called Preserve Us a Nation. And it was taken from the final stanza of that national anthem. Praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Has God preserved us a nation? What have we done to cooperate with that preservation? You see, there's an awful lot of work to be done and redone. We have to have a spiritual revival. We have to have a spiritual renewal. There has to be change within God's own house. That's God's warmest audience. And it used to be said that the church was the lighthouse of the nation. But if the church is not the lighthouse of the nation, then what is? Well, as Jesus said, if the light that is in you be darkness, how great is that darkness? So you can see the dilemma that we're facing. We're facing a great dilemma. It's not just one standing up in boldness to deliver an inaugural address that grips our minds and our hearts and reveals that somebody has the holy boldness to speak truth to a culture that has virtually abandoned the word, will, and the ways of the Lord. The way back is going to require tremendous courage. Not just the courage of a president, but the courage of we the people, and the courage of pastors to speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. The latest report came today. Though some churchgoers may prefer their pastor to be kind, confident, humble, bold, or motivating when preaching from the pulpit, the one trait they crave most is honesty, according to a new study from the Barna Report. The study conducted at the end of last year with 2,000 adults and teenagers asked respondents to imagine listening to the sermon of a Christian pastor or priest and then select from a list of 15 traits, or none of them at all, by importance when preaching, and honesty topped the list. With 11% more support than the next best trait, knowledge, honesty was selected as the top trait by 48% of the respondents. Very interesting. Others selected knowledge as 37%, compassion 36%, kindness 33%, trustworthiness 32%, humility 25%, motivating 23%, confidence 21%, relevance 17%, powerful 16%, generosity 15%, objectivity 12%, directness 10%, involved 9%, and boldness 7%. None of the above 10%. I found it interesting that they want honesty, but they don't want boldness. The problem is you can't get honesty without boldness, not real honesty. To speak the truth requires boldness. To speak the truth honestly requires boldness. And that's what's missing in our churches today. A kind of boldness, a holy boldness, that is going to grip the minds and hearts of the people sitting in the pews passively waiting for somebody to encourage them and make them feel better with non-negotiable God bless yous. And so we stand in a very unique place now. I found this report to be very fascinating. They say, 48% say they want honesty, but apparently not really. They want a semblance of honesty. They want to feel that somebody is being honest without actually being honest, because to be totally honest is going to require boldness, and only 7% of the respondents wanted boldness in their pastor. That's the reason, friends, why in the history of Israel, God had to send forth a prophet periodically. Why? Because he could not trust the pastors or the priests to deliver the truth. Oh, they were supposedly honest about it, but the people didn't get the message. They weren't so honest as to drive the message home into the hearts of the people, requiring change you could believe in. And so God raised up a prophet to tell them not only the truth honestly, but to do so with a new spirit of boldness. It's interesting that when the Jewish people in the times of Jesus began to hear his message, it got to the point where they had heard enough and they remarked about Jesus' message and said this: He speaks as one not like the prophets, excuse me, not like the priests, but like one who has been with God. He speaks with an authority not like the priests. Where did that authority come from? What was that perceived authority? It was that sense of boldness and confidence in the absolute truth of what was being said and its relevance and application. It was a wedding together of the word, the truth, the application, and the piercing application that required boldness and a confidence that indeed God had called him for such a time as this. That, my friends, is likely the confidence that exuded from Donald Trump when he said, "I was saved by God to make America great again." In other words, not to tell you sweet nothings, not to pander, not to make people feel good, but to make the nation good. In other words, to bring about change that actually would accomplish something. But that's going to require we the people to come on board. It's going to require an increasing number of we the people to come on board. Kirk Cameron, who was supposed to have joined us here in this half hour, has written a book called Born to be Brave, How to be Part of America's Spiritual Comeback. I'm going to provide a copy of it to you for those of you who are interested. It is a $29 book, hardbound, yours for $21 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Born to be brave, how to be part of America's spiritual comeback. You see, without a spiritual comeback, we have no real comeback. Oh, we can have a pretend comeback. We can have a political comeback, but it has no ground. A political comeback without a spiritual comeback has no grounding to give it any sense of permanence or true connectedness in our lives. And so we'll revel in a political comeback for a while, and things will return back because our hearts have not been changed. What is necessary is for there to be a heart change. Without a heart change, there is no real change. It's a pretend change. It's a figment of change. A number of years ago, I penned a book called Renewing the Soul of America. Renewing the Soul of America. How do you renew the soul of America? Why is it that that book was penned in 2002, has sold more than any of our other books, was served on every member of Congress, the president, every member of his cabinet? Why is it that it did not change? It's because the hearts of the people were not willing to change. They did not think that the root of our problem and the future of our country was predicated on a moral and spiritual revival. They thought they could just battle it out politically. Republican versus Democrat, donkeys and elephants battling it out as if somehow that was going to bring about lasting change. Barack Obama promised us change you could believe in. Over 20 times he was referred to in national media as the Messiah. Did we change? Oh, yes. The country did change, but not for the better. In fact, it was so bad that when Barack Obama was introduced at the inauguration, there were massive boos that came from the crowd. More than any other president, massive boos. Why? Because the changes he inaugurated were wicked, undid the country. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, friends. This is Viewpoint.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. We're taking a look now at what is necessary for holy boldness to grip our country in the aftermath, in the wake of a very, very powerful inaugural speech. What will be required? Well, that speech was primarily focused on political issues and their fallout, how to change the things that had been changed through godless administrations that had preceded it. But how does that happen? What is it that is necessary to bring about those fundamental changes? Is it executive orders? You can only do so much through executive orders. You can change things on the ground, but you can't change people's hearts. And the things that happen on the ground are issuing out of the heart. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, as Jesus said. It's interesting. If you go to the book of Acts, you find Peter and John, who were relatively ignorant. They were not educated men. They were fishermen. And they had just, through the power of God, healed a lame man at the Gate Beautiful. And so the man runs into the temple, leaping and praising God for what had been just done. And the religious leaders were beside themselves because they didn't want that kind of change. They wanted pretty much business as usual that they could control. And they couldn't control this guy. So they said, well, where did this all come from? And, of course, it led to Peter and John. So they arrested Peter and John because there was holy boldness that had been displayed there with change you could really believe in. And so after warning them for this wonderful thing that had been done in the name of Jesus, they claim no power or no authority on their own. It is through His name that this man has been made whole. So the religious leaders looked at Peter and John, and here's what they concluded. They couldn't judge them further because they perceived a boldness in them revealing they had been with Jesus. That's what our nation needs to see. That's what the world needs to see. They perceived in us that we had been with Jesus. Not the pusillanimous Jesus that is so often taught and preached and that was spoken of today at the National Cathedral by a so-called female bishop who made mockery of the Word of God, who made mockery of everything that Donald Trump spoke about concerning restoring practical righteousness in the relationship of the people, embracing two genders and so on. And this purported religious leader stood there in the name of Christ, mocking the very authority of God and his word. That's what we're up against. It was mind-boggling. But the direction, the drift of our country is so great, my friends, that we can celebrate all we want about political change. But unless there's a heart change in we the people, a massive spiritual change in the hearts of we the people, America is not going to change. Not really. Oh, we'll have peripheral changes. We'll have political changes by edict, but there won't be changes of the mind and the heart. One of the reasons for that is the lamp of virtue has virtually gone out. The lamp of virtue has almost gone out. October 28, 1886, the Statue of Liberty was dedicated. Those seven spikes in Liberty's crown represented the seven continents of the world and the seven seas, and inscribed on the tablet held in her hand is the date of our Declaration of Independence. A fellow by the name of Bartholdi first conceived that the statue should be a lighthouse, shedding a light across the sea from its crown. So he titled it Liberty Enlightening the World. Congress in 1877 accepted the statue as a beacon, authorizing it to be administered by the Lighthouse Board. And later the torch was re-sculpted and became a beacon as well, radiating the light of liberty and virtue as far as the eye could see. So this idea of virtue had grown into a symbol in the light of America. So we prided ourselves on virtue. But then in the 75th anniversary edition of Forbes magazine that came out on September 14th, 1992, the very year that God spoke to my heart saying, "Son, you've been pleading the cause of men long enough. I want you to plead my cause now in the land as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation." That very year, Forbes' 75th anniversary edition came out, the premier business magazine in America. And here's what the title was: A Demoralized Society. In other words, the morality had been so corrupted in America that America's foremost business magazine had to deliver its half-inch thick magazine to dealing with the issue, to bring focus to the gravity of our national life. Here were some of the quotes from that article that'll help us to see that issue simply. Moral concepts, still moral judgments, are understood to be somehow undemocratic and unseemly. We pride ourselves on being liberated from such retrograde Victorian notions as virtue. Today, we have so completely rejected Victorian ethos that we deliberately, systematically divorce morality from public policy. In the current climate of moral relativism and skepticism, it is thought improper to impose any moral conditions or requirements. We are now confronting the consequences of this policy of moral neutrality. We're discovering that the economic and social aspects of these problems are inseparable from the moral and psychological ones. And having made the most determined effort to devise remedies that are value-free, we find that these policies imperil the material as well as the moral well-being of their intended beneficiaries, and not only of individuals, but of the whole society as a whole. We have demoralized society itself. That was 1992, friends. That was 3 years before we started this radio program. And that's been almost 30 years now. So the dawn's early light has become very dark. So the words what so proudly we hail at the dawn's first gleaming or last gleaming don't make much sense anymore. If the problem wasn't so serious, it might seem almost humorous. It's difficult to comprehend how seemingly intelligent adult Americans can have slipped so far as to, for all practical purposes, call black-white and white-black. We call immorality choices, and we call the pursuit of virtue bigotry, rightist, extremist, and fundamentalist. So our lamp has gone out. We're groping our way in the late dusk of American society. In the words, dare we quote the musical group Simon and Garfunkel, the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, sounds of silence, moral silence. It seems as if virtue had become a four-letter word. The most vocal elements of our society have these last 40 years, 50 years, led us to believe that virtue is out and moral neutrality is in. Heroes have been branded with labels for speaking up for that which was right and honorable. Because mankind's greatest needs are to be loved and to be accepted, we've defaulted on virtue and standing for morality to avoid feeling rejected. We've been made to feel as if virtue were a four-letter word. And unfortunately, that has plagued the pulpits of America. The courage has been lost. Instead of talking about family values, we should be talking about virtues. I want to make available to you a book that will help all of us in this moment of challenge, of opportunity. There is a light that came shining through the darkness yesterday. But what we do with it will determine the future of the country. It's not up to a president. It's up to we the people. A few years ago, the leadership of the Christian Coalition was shifted from its original founder and leader to two congressmen, Don Hodell and Randy Tate. They made a statement that gripped America and the Christian church. They said, if we were to fill every elective office in this country with so-called Christians of the ilk that Christians are in our country today, America would still not change. Why? They said, because America will not change until the hearts of the people change. That's our problem. The heart of the matter is the heart. Bill Bright, back in 2002, said, as a country and as individuals, we stand at a crossroads to continue on the path to godlessness or to return to the way of righteousness. What did we do at that crossroads? Nothing. And now, in 2025, we have someone who has stood. Some have mocked him for his lack of morality in his past life. But at least he's standing. Where are the pastors? Where are we, the people, willing to stand? When the Russian Times comes out in response to Donald Trump's statement yesterday, saying that we're restoring the conviction for this country that there are only two genders. The Russian Times came out and cheered, basically saying it's about time. The decades-long U.S. promotion of the diversity and inclusion agenda should be investigated on an international level, said Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman Zakharova. Zakharova made the remarks a day after newly inaugurated U.S. President Trump ended protections for transgender rights and diversity, equity, and inclusion within the federal government. She said, can you imagine how many people's lives have been ruined over the years of promoting this nonsense? What should hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people do now who have been forced to accept the ideology of amputating healthy genitals and replacing them with artificial ones? It appears that in Russia, maybe they can see things a little more clearly than we're able to see them here in this country. Friends, there's a reason why 38 national leaders endorsed this book, Renewing the Soul of America. And it will encourage your heart. $15, we'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Renewing the Soul of America, one person at a time, beginning with you. Oh, it's practical, all right. It's encouraging. It's inspiring. Yeah, probing as well. Renewing the Soul of America, $15 on the website. Write to us at $6 for postage and handling. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. And listen.